In October of 2008, a woman by the name of Phyllis Trickle published a wonderful book called The Great Emergence. And in that book, she repeated the claim, first made by another scholar, that every 500 years or so, the Christian church fundamentally redefines itself. She then laid out the timeline that proved her point. In the 6th century, she noted, religious orders began to form within the church, orders that today we would recognize with names like the Jesuits or the Franciscans. That was the first period of redefinition. The second period of redefinition occurred about 500 years later, when the first break in the church occurred between what we know today as the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church. This, for the first time ever, separated Christians along theological and even geographical lines. The Catholic Church came to dominate the West, and the Orthodox Church, the East. And the third period of redefinition of the Church began 500 years ago this Tuesday, when a Catholic priest by the name of Martin Luther posted a series of religious concerns he had on the door of his local church. He posted those concerns simply hoping to start a conversation about the need for reform. Instead, his action took on a life of its own and began what we know today simply as the Reformation, an event that created a brand spanking new group of Christians who are today called the Protestants. Each of those three redefinitions brought something important to the spiritual life of Christian community. The establishment of religious orders, for instance, brought a whole new focus in the spiritual practices and spiritual disciplines of the faithful. The establishment of the Orthodox Church brought a new way of organizing ourselves, a way that was a lot more democratic and much more mystical. And the Protestant Reformation brought a new understanding of the church, an understanding that was less focused on the institution itself and more focused on the individual. The whole point of Phyllis's book was that we are at the end of yet another 500-year period. And by inference, that means that we are on the verge of needing to redefine ourselves for the fourth time. The publication of Phyllis's book caused great concern among many church leaders, for the idea of fundamentally redefining ourselves could be a scary idea. Of course, the modern church leaders weren't the first to be scared by this notion of redefining ourselves. In today's passage from Deuteronomy, we're going to hear the story of another group of people who were on the verge of redefining themselves as well, the Israelites. Now, the Israelites had had one way of living together as a community from the time that they had left the bonds of slavery in Egypt. And that one way of being was to follow Moses. After all, he had gotten them out of Egypt. He had taken them through the Red Sea. He had led them through the desert for 40 years. He had served as the vessel whereby the law was given to the people. And he had helped them find food and water out in the desert when they needed it most. In other words, they thought, Moses had taken care of their needs, and as long as they had Moses, they would be just fine. But then something happened, something that rocked their worlds, something that made them question who it was who had actually provided for their needs and who they really needed in order to be okay. So listen carefully as I read this morning's passage from Deuteronomy chapter 34, verses 1 through 12. And then let's see what we can learn from that story that can help us today. Then Moses hiked up from the Moabite plains to Mount Nebo, the peak of the Pisgah slope which faces Jericho. The Lord showed him the whole land, the Gilead region, as far as Dan's territory, all the parts belonging to Naphtali along the road, along with the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, as well as the entirety of Judah, as far as the Mediterranean Sea. Also, the arid southern plain, and the plain, including the Jericho Valley, Palm City, as far as Zoar. Then the Lord said to Moses, "This is the land that I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob when I promised, I will give it to your descendants. I have shown it to you with your own eyes. However, you will not cross over into it. Then Moses, the Lord's servant, died right there in the land of Moab, according to the Lord's command. The Lord buried him in a valley in Moabite country, across from Beth Peor. Even now, no one knows where Moses' grave is. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eyesight wasn't impaired, and his vigor hadn't diminished a bit. Back down in the Moabite plains, the Israelites mourned Moses' death for 30 days. At that point, the time for weeping and mourning Moses was over. Joshua, Nun's son, was filled with wisdom because Moses had placed his hands on him. So the Israelites listened to Joshua, and they did exactly what the Lord commanded Moses. No prophet like Moses has yet emerged in Israel. Moses knew the Lord face to face. That's not even to mention all those signs and wonders that the Lord sent Moses to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh, to all his servants, and to his entire land, as well as all the extraordinary power that Moses displayed before Israel's own eyes. Thus ends the reading. Can you imagine how the people must have felt during this time? What it would be like to feel as if everything that you had ever known was suddenly being ripped away from you, not knowing what the future would look like, and not sure how to get there, how to get to this promised land? Well, I can. For those of us who have entered into ministry since the dawn of the new millennia 17 years ago, we have all grappled with that shifting reality. Now, we didn't have to live through the painful death of a single leader, a monumental one like Moses. No, we had to live through the death of something else, the death of the way that we had always done church before. Let me explain what I mean by that. For most of the time the Christian church had been around in the United States, there was one and only one way of doing things. You would set up an organizational structure or flowchart full of boards, committees, and task forces. Then you would ask people to serve. They would agree and carry out ministry. And that was how ministry was done in the church for over 300 years. By the end of the 20th century, however, that way of being church began to decline. People in our churches had more pressures and demands in their lives than ever before. So when it came time to reach out and fill those boards, committees, and task forces, guess what started to happen? People began to say no like never before. In many ways, we modern Christians were like the Israelites at Moab. We went through a period of weeping and wailing, and we mourned the loss of the only way of being that those of us who'd spent our lives in the church had ever known. In some ways, our situation was even more dire than the Israelites, for they were lucky. They were given a single leader, Joshua, who would step in and pick things up for them and get them back to business as usual. But not us. So how are we going to find our way forward these days? How indeed? Well, thankfully, many of us in the church were blessed with a way forward, a way that will truly revolutionize our way of being church by no longer depending just on a few select leaders to do the work for us, but by the direct involvement of each and every member of the community. A way that will have every bit of as much of an impact as the establishment of the religious orders did, as the schism did, or as the Reformation did. And that way of being boils down to a single word. You ready to hear it? You're not going to like it. That word is technology. Of course, this new era in the life of the church won't be the first time that technology has rocked our world. When the Gutenberg press was first created, making it possible to publish books, it revolutionized Christianity, because it made it possible to put a Bible in the hands of every person who wanted one. And it took people's spiritual lives to a whole new level. But today, the printing press is no longer going to do that for us. Today, it will be the World Wide Web. When we began stumbling on that answer, this new Joshua, if you will, we church leaders, especially us pastors, are pretty naive. We thought, this new way is going to be easy. I mean, most, but not all, are on the computer every day. So getting them to use it to feed their spiritual lives is going to be easy. You think we were right? Wrong. What we have found over the years is that many folks were actually very intentional about not using technology for their spiritual lives. Sure, they would go online, check their bank statements, and even shop, but then they would log off. And the reason for doing so had a lot to do with how they thought about this thing called church. It was in a separate box, over here, away from the rest of our lives. Well, today on this Reformation Sunday, I ask you to rethink that approach. And today, I'm going to invite us to celebrate the Reformation, not with a cake, but with something else, a homework assignment. Your assignment is to go home, fire up your computer, your laptop, or your smartphone, and visit our church website, www.woodlandhillscommunitychurch.org. You'll be surprised what you find there if you haven't visited it before. You'll find things like audio copies of the weekly sermons to help you stay spiritually connected to us even when you're away. You'll find a copy of the announcements, some of which are so current that we didn't even have time to include them in the Sunday bulletin. You'll find detailed calendars of church events so that you will never, ever have to say again, "Well, I didn't know about that." You'll find listed opportunities to grow spiritually through things like Bible studies, Advent studies, and fellowship groups. You'll find mission or service opportunities that your fellow WHCCers are already participating in. And you'll even find a blog there where you can interact with your pastor 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and ask him any spiritual question that is on your heart. If every person with a computer here this morning made a practice of visiting the church's website even once a week, you would be shocked at the effect. We would have greater participation and spiritual growth than perhaps ever before in the life of this church. And I know what some of you are thinking. But what about me, Pastor Craig? I don't have a computer or a smartphone. Does that mean that you're kicking me to the curb, saying I'm no longer relevant and completely unable to participate in the body of Christ here at WHCC? Not at all. In fact, what I'm saying is that your lack of access to a computer creates a powerful opportunity for ministry. For your lack of access will make it possible for you to partner with someone in the church who does have access and covenant with each other. There's that word covenant again. To check in regularly so that your new ministry partner can keep you up to date. Friends, I know it's going to be tempting to do what the Israelites did for a while on the plains of Moab, to weep and to wail for the passing of the old ways. And if you need to do that, fine. Go ahead for a while. But once you've done that, I invite you to raise your swollen eyes and do what Christians have done for centuries before you. Look to the new thing that God is doing. Look for the new ways in which God is binding us together and blessing us so that we together might go into our own experience and expression of the promised land. As you answer your invitation to go to this new land, My hope and prayer is that people here won't say that the Reformation occurred once. On October 31st, 1517 in Wittenberg, Germany. No, my hope and prayer is that people in 5 years will look back and say that another Reformation began this very day, when God, once again using our technology, took us to places of which we had never even dreamed. Amen.